If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is
Hi, everyone. Hello. Welcome to My Good Bad Brain. As usual, this is just me posting the Good Bad Brain that we record live on Sundays. Dr. Nick is a regular feature of My Good Bad Brain now, which is great because now we have an actual professional that people can talk to. And that is the main thing that I was excited about this new season of doing this, is creating a way for, I don't know, more resources to be readily available to people who are out there who might want somebody to ask questions of related to mental health. But, you know, accessibility is still an issue in our society with our terrible health system and money and things like that. And now you can't even leave your house. So it's even better. It's even better. If you want to talk to a mental health professional, you can do it with Dr. Nick every Sunday at the My Good Bad Brain podcast recording live stream thing. Speaking of, I'm going to change this week. We're going to go to YouTube and try YouTube because something I didn't realize, I mean, Allie pointed out to me and she was totally right. Mixer, I'm just not used to this. You know, I'm like new to this streaming thing. Mixer, apparently you need to have like some Microsoft account to like log into it. And that's, you have to have that if you want to post questions and things like that. I don't know. It's a whole rigmarole. And I didn't really realize the barrier to entry was so difficult. I thought you could just sign in, like you'd not even sign in, just go to the YouTube, like the URL, rather, and just do it. So whatever. Long story short is, I'm going to switch to YouTube, try to stream on YouTube. Allie did a live stream on YouTube that went well for her Patreon and stuff. And I was like, yeah, let's try it. Because a lot of people, if you have a Google account, you have a YouTube account. And maybe that'll make it easier for people to engage and talk and ask questions, whatever. So we're going to do that. So that's one thing. It'll be at my old ass YouTube channel, youtube.com/jsleeper, which it's just my name. It's my initial, Jared Sleeper. So yeah, I'll reiterate that in posts, but whatever. That's one thing. And then, yeah, so this app, I'm not going to talk too much longer because I just want people to get into the app. We talk about everything on there. I wanted to ask, I mean, I basically want to kick off this idea of like, what's the difference between staying positive, but not toxic positive, you know, which is a thing where, you know, the sort of thing of instead of, I don't know, the fine line between positive ideation, believing you can change your state, working towards changing your state, your mental health state, your physical state, whatever your circumstances, but not in a way that's like this sort of deranged denial of reality that lacks any kind of like real empathy or compassion for yourself or others. And we encounter those things a lot. You know, that sort of the most obvious version is just like, well, just stop being so upset. Like, you know, like just think positively. Just think more positively, totally not taking into account the reality of your experience, right? So I wanted to ask Dr. Nick about his thoughts that because in this quarantine thing, I feel like that's a thing that's going around a lot is like for me, at least I'm trying to keep my spirits up, but also acknowledge when things are overwhelming or I don't feel great. And that I think that's very necessary to actually improving your situation, is looking at it for what it is. So that's kind of the jumping off point here. And it always is just a jumping off point. Obviously, people engage and, you know, we talk and it goes where it goes. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I hope you will join us this Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll live stream again. But I'm going to do it from youtube.com/jsleeper. I think you'll be able to just find the live there. That should work out all good and fine. And yeah, it'll be really fun. If you enjoyed the pod, feel free to check out My Good Bad Brain on Patreon, patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. That's super helpful to keeping this thing going. And yeah, you can also like leave reviews. Those any kind of like positive reviews are like so helpful to, you know, getting in the algorithms and people having some nice stuff to read when they go to look for the pod. And tell your friends and send your questions if you have any. You can send them to mygoodbadbrain@gmail.com, questions or topics. You know, yeah, join us. It's going to be fun. We'll be back. We'll be back up on this Sunday. So we'll see you Sunday. All right. Talk to you later. Bye. How you doing, bud?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm actually feeling pretty good. No, I'm feeling good. I think it's like I'm like semi dismayed, I guess. I don't know. Dismayed's the wrong word. And actually, it's sort of related to the themes I wanted to ask you about today. About like how I'm like feeling pretty good still in this quarantine thing. I think like the world doing this press pause thing feels oddly focusing to me.
Yeah,
I think part of it might have to do with having, you know, ADHD and depression-y kind of things or anxiety related things, but mostly ADHD stuff where like regular society and life has like never made a lot of sense to me. And I feel like it's almost like the blank canvas problem. You know, where like you just don't know what you're supposed to do with your life or your time or whatever. And this sort of like crisis just focuses everything. It just feels like, you know, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And even still, it's not like the stand. It's not like the end of civilization or something like that. But mm-hmm. it does feel like a little bit of a dress rehearsal or something for something really bad. It just goes like, OK, what's important to you? Who do you love? What do you love? What do you want to do with your time? Do you want to be connecting with human beings? Like, you know, on the one hand, it's like, I feel like I'm semi agoraphobic already. Like I just started to like not want to leave the house, but it's making me actually connect more with people, that I miss people. So I think that keeps happening. And I'll segue to my question in a moment, but what about you? How's it feel for you?
That all makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. I think, yeah, honestly, like I'm a little bit of a homebody anyway. So, I mean, certainly not to this extent, but it doesn't. And I'm very lucky because I like where I am, you know, I'm with Gina. There's really a lot to be grateful for. But at the same time, I think what's been kind of weird to me, other than kind of being worried for like my friends in LA and New York, you know, that's where like all my friends are, that worries me a little bit because the evidence seems to suggest that things are really getting a lot worse in the big metro areas. And you know, I'm worried about my mom. She's by herself, but she's in DC and like, and our area is pretty suburban. So she seems to be doing well. She's working from home. I think beyond that, what's just been so weird to me is that all of these kind of assumptions that we thought were pillars of our reality have been revealed to just be habit and assumption. And that's weird. I wonder if people are going to remember that, or if we will very quickly kind of succumb to the pressure to return to business as usual. I mean, all these things that we just assumed had to be a certain way, you know, like the way our healthcare system works, the way employment works, the way our kind of professional interactions work, online education. I mean, we're basically conducting a giant real-time experiment right now to see how effective online education is, you know, across all these different sectors.
I wonder about that as well, because I think you're right. It's a very strange overnight push to the left in some ways of saying like, all these issues that we said were, well, online entertainment advancements for sure, but all these things that we said were like accessibility issues of working from home. Like you just start with that sort of like ableist stuff like that. Like if you have to come to an office or not, clearly not, but then also for sure, like healthcare access and things, you know, obviously there's still a lot of shady like stuff going on, but at least to the extent of saying, well, we have this health crisis, people, you have to be able to have access to this without getting charged for it. I still think some people are getting like bills and stuff, but like that for sure. The money thing, I'm very curious to see. I mean, this package is like, actually, maybe you, I don't know if you know, I mean, this is obviously, it's not your expertise or anything like that, but I figured I'd just ask you, do you know how the like, my understanding is everyone's getting this $1,200 check, but that like for not a couple months though, but that Bernie got this thing added in that was like unemployment benefits, adds an extra $600 for 4 months every week. But yeah, that's like if you are on unemployment, right? You have to be like laid off or fired and then file for unemployment. And then you know, something like that.
Well, you're right. I mean, my understanding is that they've now extended unemployment coverage to gig workers, but I don't know practically how that works because nobody can get through. I mean, you have to call. I think you have to actually call a person in order to file for unemployment as a gig worker under these new provisions, which were just voted into law like on Wednesday. So I don't know anyone who's successfully navigated that process, although like all of my LA friends are eligible based on those criteria. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm very curious. Okay. So, and P.S., anybody watching, if you have any questions or thoughts, if you have any sort of like topics you'd like us to cover, feel free to just ask them in the chat. I can see that on, I think, a very slight delay. So that's a good way to get in here. And I will also say a little just business up front. We might be leaving Mixer and just trying this on YouTube next week because I didn't realize, I don't know, I'm not familiar with this platform. So I was like, let's just pick a streaming platform. But Twitch seemed like a cesspool and Mixer seemed nice. But apparently you need to have like a Microsoft account to be able to log in and comment and engage. So thank you so much to everybody who jumped through those hoops or just use your Xbox account, I suppose, to sign in here already. But we might switch over to try YouTube because Allie did a stream on YouTube a couple days ago and she mentioned all this to me. She was like, you know, it's kind of complicated to blah, 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 blah. So anyway, be forewarned. We might switch over to YouTube next week. We'll see how that goes.
I can't see you again. I might just hop out and hop back in one time.
Okay, go for it. Let's see if it works. Can you hear me? Am I there?
Yeah, I can hear and see you now.
Okay, that's really weird. Maybe we'll just have to, you know, just rogue avocado. I can't tell you how much that means to me. We're gonna do quarantine calisthenics today again at noon. By the way, every day we're doing it. I've gone like 2 weeks straight. It's amazing.
That's great.
Okay. So my thought, well, one of the like kind of a silly question I was going to ask you, but it does get at like a sort of like human nature question. All right, these are the two things I wanted to talk about. One's kind of silly and one's kind of not. The more like one I wanted to talk about overall is the notion of toxic positivity. Have you ever like heard that phrase?
Yeah.
And like this idea of, because I have been experiencing like, this feeling of, you know, surprise at how okay I am, but in a lot of ways, I know part of ADHD is feeling good in crisis, is feeling like comfortable when things are heightened or strange and like, you know, a lot of different factors are coming from. And I've just encountered that my whole life. Whenever some like really serious, even like life or deathy type situations, I just always feel very focused and calm and good. And that sounds like a very like macho thing to say. And it's, I don't mean it that way. It's actually like really frustrating for most of life. You're just like overwhelmed by nothing. And then when, and then you create chaos in your life so you feel comfortable. It's terrible. But that being said, I do feel kind of good in it. And I think it's a twofold thing. Threefold maybe. Part of it's my brain and just my natural rhythms. Part of it is a sense of like, another person says it took him forever to learn how to log in and just got it. So I good to know. We're going to switch for sure. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, on that thing, part of it's that natural rhythm that I have. ADD, right? Just I get a feed coming in at the same time. Part of it is a sense of a calm before the storm, a sense of like it might get really bad. And if it gets way, way bad, I just want to enjoy this time. Like Allie and I had this hilarious, we've been like making dinners more. And like, it's just crazy how much like in our regular rhythms, you know, like anybody who cohabitates, it's like, you know, kind of like sometimes, you know, you don't have that dinner time, you know, but we've had more like we're making dinner together. We sit down, we like make a whole meal. We put it on the table. We had some wine. I go, Alexa, play a sexy classical. Just like set, you know, set, like horrible saxophone music. It's like very funny. You know, but like engaging, and it's nice. And I feel like part of me is like calm before a storm feeling. I want to appreciate whatever's going on and not pre freak out. Right. Not like I know something bad's coming, so I'm going to have anxiety about it twice. But then also there's this other real part of me that's like philosophically saying, I feel like I have to be like a happy warrior. It's like it might get really bad. It's already really bad for a lot of people, and it's only going to get worse. And I truly feel like there's kind of a, not to get all like moralistic, but there's like this good and evil kind of thing where it's like some people will profit off this. Some people thrive in this kind of chaos, and they're going to try to make it worse and only get stronger and happier in that. And that for people who are care about other human beings and are empathetic and sensitive and worried about what's going to happen, it's incumbent on us to stay as strong and positive and, you know, keeping our sense of humor, trying to stay healthy as best we can, knowing it might get worse, and to like uplift each other and help, you know, to be in a position where you're strong enough to help people. Like, I guess sort of like putting your mask on the airplane first. So, So I feel like that sounds very important to me, but I think there's a fine line between happy warrior trying to take care of yourself and, you know, genuinely creating sort of a strength, and then this notion of toxic positivity. So I wanted to talk about, well, let's just start from there. So what do you think about that? Like toxic positivity, meaning, you know, people who are just like, you say something bad you're going through, I have no income, I'm broke, my job, lost my job, blah, blah. And people are just like, just stay positive. You just got to fucking turn that frown upside down. You got to manifest the shit that you want to have be here.
I hate that.
Yeah, it's bad.
My short answer is I hate that. There are a lot of, also just really, really quickly, I saw like a great Reddit post that was, remember in like their last Avatar, The Last Airbender, when Uncle Iroh goes to prison and then he like gets out and he's just completely jacked, you know?
Oh yeah.
It was like, you know, Uncle Iroh, this is what Uncle Iroh did when he was trapped in the cell for however long. So no excuses.
Yeah. I'm doing the same thing a little bit where you're just like,
I know, God, it just reminds me also of like these fucking Wall Street bros doing like prison workouts, going to like prison boot camp. It's like, what a bizarre fantasy. How warped and twisted, how small must you feel on the inside to think that it's a good idea for you to do like a prison fantasy run by an
ex?
It's just sick. I find it so sick.
It's so sick. I will say, and just, you know, mea culpa, I definitely have in my mind, I have said before, like maybe I could get convicted of some crime just so I could read, you know, just so you kind of like life would make more sense. You just got to survive in here. Maybe that's why I feel, you know, you just got to read and research things that you write.
To what you're saying before, which is like, there's so many silly bullshit responsibilities we have to worry about that, like, I don't think our evolutionary biology was set up to help us manage like 9 or 10 abstract subscriptions and like do all this weird intermediate planning. It just isn't kind of what we were built to do. I mean, obviously we can do it, but you know, it's just not.
Like, I know. I had like, I bought this, you know, I got this truck to replace with my insurance a couple of months ago, and I'm really fucking stupid about like, you got to go to the DMV and, you know, change the title over, even though they signed the thing, which I didn't know. And I was like, oh, I got to do that. I'm going to do that, I guess, one of these days. And then they were just like, DMV got shut down. And I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, okay, well.
I mean, that type of shit, though, where it's just like all this dumb bullshit that you have to do that's abstract and like creates this kind of persistent stress load.
I guess that's my question is, how do you, if somebody, you know, especially if there's somebody who's not in that tough a situation, right? Who like might be like, they already work from home, like one of us, you know, and they're like faring it very well, and you're having real stress, like real stressors. Like, what do you, how do you respond to that?
Okay. So this toxic positivity thing. So there's like a, like different kind of, intervention strategies and programs and theories have different words for this. Like in recovery, they call it the pink cloud, you know, where you're like been sober for 2 months in rehab and you're like, I'm done with this shit forever. Like I'll never use drugs again. Like I feel fucking great. Let me go out and help everybody else. You know, like I know how to do it. I got you. Like basically discounting your own risk and danger. So that's kind of like the recovery element. And then in DBT, in dialectical behavior therapy, they also talk about this as kind of like basically as an ineffective way of regulating your emotions, which is just like unrealistic positivity. Like, I got it. I'm in therapy. Everything's fixed. I'm ready for my biggest challenges. I'm going to take on this thing I've been meaning to do for forever that's super hard for me. Like, I got it. And the idea there is that you are oscillating between two extremes, right? One, which is the hopelessness and total ineffectiveness, and the other, which is like this unrealistic effectiveness. Whereas the truth is this uncomfortable middle ground, which is that, like, okay, I'm slowly gaining some skills over time and labor. I'm acquiring these skills, and I'm probably not at a level of skill where I can tackle my most difficult, like, lifelong persistent challenges, but I'm probably ready to do some more difficult things a little bit better. You know, I could probably work a little harder. I could probably do a little better. But I'm probably not going to be able to do an excellent job on the most difficult things in my life right now at this level of skill. You know, that's like a costly mental calculus. It's hard to do that because you have to figure out, okay, like, where am I on this scale of difficulty? And both things are moving targets. Like, the scale of difficulty is kind of a moving target, and the level of skill you've acquired is also a moving target, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it's hard, and it's easier for people to go like, no, I'm good now. I'm on the pink cloud, right, to use the recovery metaphor. So I think when people, so a couple things. One is, we know the people in our lives, if they're like in our lives, who default to that like relentless ineffective positivity, which is basically an emotion regulation strategy for themselves. Right. And it's all over the internet now. It's just like so dumb, right? Where, you know, everything can be overcome with your mind, you know, like all your problems are your fault. Just be positive and manifest all that kind of nonsense. It is just that nonsense. Complex problems take usually complex solutions, and that requires skill and practice. So, you know, you don't just manifest your way through that. Wow. So, you know, when there are people in your life who have kind of fallen prey to that, like, basically psychobabble nonsense, and those are not the people you should go to for validation or advice. You know, you got to go to people who are realistic thinkers. Yeah. So I think part of it is just pruning that kind of nonsense out of your daily life and making sure that you don't perpetuate that culture, which I think is toxic. I mean, no one, it doesn't help you to solve problems to just hear that, well, you need to be more positive. Like, what's the path forward? You know?
Yeah. That is interesting because I think, I mean, I was talking to my psychiatrist earlier this week. I have like a once a month appointment with my psychiatrist now that I'm, because psychiatrists for like medication, you know, and just check in and see if anything needs to change. And we talk a little bit. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like saying, it was all over the phone. Nobody's doing in persons, which also meant that like some of my prescriptions can't be refilled because you can't do them over the phone. But, I could tell because I could tell, like, I'm like, I actually feel like pretty good. I was like going over all the stuff that felt good that I could tell that my psychiatrist was like, oh, okay, really? Yeah. You know what I mean? Just, and it makes me start to go like, because I could tell probably sounds like a little bit of that cloud, that pink cloud thing where you're just like, actually, I'm great. Actually, in this horrible time, actually, I'm doing fucking great and nothing. And my psychiatrist on the other line was like, oh, okay, really? Oh. And I guess it was good because it made me go like, wait. Am I doing the thing? Am I doing the thing where I'm just like, actually, I'm fucking awesome. And it's weird. It's weird. What is it, stressful out there? I don't even, you know, where like I'm just shoving it into some weird closet of my body where I'm just like, and I think there's some of that going on, you know, some of that like compartmentalizing. But again, I don't know. You said something a second ago, by the way, before you can feel free to respond to however you want. But I just want to repeat it because I liked it. It was just that like complex problems require complex solutions and that requires, what'd you say, like practice, like time and practice?
Yeah. Skill and practice, you know, Yeah. I mean, okay. So look, I think we also have to, there are like multiple axes running through these questions. Okay. And one of them is short-term, long-term, always. Like whenever you think about coping, you got to think about short-term, long-term. I think if you're in the middle of like a shitstorm, it could be adaptive in the short term to be like, I'm going to fucking handle this. You know, like I got this. That could be very adaptive. to get out of a crisis, right? By crisis, I mean something that requires an immediate response that has serious consequences. Okay. But that's not a long-term strategy. Like right. A long-term or even intermediate strategy probably requires like some scaffolding, some stacking of potential solutions, some trial and error, you know, compartmentalizing in the sense of breaking a complex problem into smaller chunks and solving each of those chunks one at a time, like DMV, for example. Okay, getting the form, making an appointment, going to get the smog done, like all the, you know, that's like a four-step problem to get your fucking, you know,
right,
registration sticker, whatever, just for an example. So, you know, short-term, long-term is one issue. And then, you know, doing some kind of like honest check-in, like, okay, is this, what kind of problem is this? In my suite of probable solutions, like which one probably is going to be a good fit? Did it work after I tried it? Like how well did it work? You know, is the problem solved? How do I feel? Because, you know, not doing that complex problem and just chilling on the internet is a great problem solving strategy for my immediate anxiety.
Yeah.
It's not a great problem solving strategy for that intermediate term actual task I have to get done.
Well, that's a good question for that about like the toxic positivity thing. Maybe part of why the toxic positivity thing, because I also don't ever want to, I think this is what gets tricky about it is that if I have a brain that goes black and white and extreme, is I hear this criticism of the notion of toxic positivity. And then I'm like, oh, so I can't change things with my mind. Oh, so I guess I am just fucked here. And I can like sink into going like, I have this condition. I have this brain situation. I am stuck. You know what I mean? But yeah. I don't want to take away that from myself. But so one thing that just made me think is like maybe focusing on like, and this is a question I'm asking, I guess this is, so please respond, not like I'm saying this concretely. The thought that occurs to me is that maybe my feeling isn't necessarily the best benchmark of how well I'm doing, and that there, I could measure that perhaps better if I picked like things I was trying to accomplish, like, you know, whether they are like finishing certain work things or task hobby things or just getting out of bed or I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe is that a better way to measure my wellness?
Well, look, so I think I really think the kind of like Buddhist formulation is the most accurate and helpful here, which is that all emotions are transient. They will all come and they will all go. No emotion that you felt ever, even if it's the most intense emotion that you've ever felt, has stuck around at that level of intensity forever. It can't and it won't. It's just limited by our biology. So that's just a kind of existential truth of emotion, is that it arises and passes away. That's the nature of emotions, are to arise and pass away. So you got to think, like, is it effective to peg all of your evaluations of how you're doing on something that inherently arises and passes away? I don't think so. I mean, right. Now certainly I want to experience good emotions. And when I do experience them, I want to enjoy the shit out of them, like enjoy the hell out of those positive emotions when they arise, you know? And when I'm feeling like negative, shitty emotions, I don't enjoy that, you know? I don't want to feel those things. At the same time, I know that they're going to arise and pass away. Now, are there conditions in my life that make it more likely for positive emotions to arise more frequently and persist for longer? Yeah, there are probably conditions that contribute to that. Similarly, are there conditions that contribute to negative emotions arising more frequently, intensely, and sticking around for longer? Yeah, totally. So those conditions, I think, are the things we want to be working on. But those conditions, you know, the causes and conditions of our transient emotions, those are things that typically take, like, you know, longer term work.
Yeah.
And our emotional state in the moment is going to have an impact on how effective we are at working on those things. But just our emotional state is not an effective tool for changing those causes and conditions, in my view.
You referred to something a few weeks back, which I've been like almost daily bring it up again, doing the workouts and stuff, is the triangle of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors.
Yeah, the cognitive triangle.
It's just called the cognitive triangle. Yeah, because that, I mean, that is so helpful and true. And like, I've been finding it really in practice with the workout things, because there are definitely, you know, I mean, I don't know the last time I was this consistent with anything in my life, but with exercise in particular, there are days I really don't want to do it. I'm like, I'm just like, maybe I can get away with like, we finally need a rest day or something like that, you know? But I'm like, ah, but that's the whole point, is we show up every day. We just do it. You know, I can change it to like a mobility day or something. But anyway, and I've just found that like also by the end of the 30, 40 minutes that we do it, I've never regretted it. I always feel way better by the end of it. And that just seems like proof in the pudding of this like behavior over thoughts and feelings thing, is just do the behavior and see if your thoughts and feelings come along with.
Yeah. I would just add one thing, is that the, you know, there are like a lot of these concepts that are interrelated, but another one is fusion and defusion. So the idea that when we're fused to our emotional experience, it's like, it's right up in our, it's like, you know, you taped a piece of paper to your face with that emotion written on it, and you just cannot see anything else. And then defusion is when you're through, then there are like a lot of strategies for this. One is just like narrating, I am having the experience of X, you know, so you differentiate between the context of the experience, you, and the experience that you're having, which is transient, like the paper stuck to your face. So this act of defusion, making space in between you, the perceiver, and the emotion, the experience that you're having in the moment, you know, when you create that space, you reduce intensity and you make room for a lot of other things to get in there as well, you know?
That's so good. Is it diff, is the word like defuse or diff, like D-I-F-F or D-E-F?
D-E.
Okay, like, so defuse.
Yeah, rather than diffuse. Yeah.
Wait, so can you talk a little bit more about those strategies to defuse? That one you said about like narrating, self-narrating, sounds really interesting.
Yeah, so there's a treatment approach called acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT, not ACT, ACT. They're very particular about that.
Okay.
And it was developed by this guy, Steve Hayes, who's a psychologist at actually University of Nevada, Reno. And it uses a bunch of, so the central premise is that a lot of our distress comes from being fused to our experiences. So there are a lot of strategies that he uses to practice defusion. One of them is just like repeating a word over and over and over again until it starts to lose meaning, like saying milk, you know, 500 times until you're just like, what the fuck? It's just like a sound. It does. Wow. I'm just arbitrarily assigning meaning. It's pretty like intensely philosophical. It's fun if you like that stuff.
Honestly, it sounds like an acting exercise, like, which is maybe funny that it's called ACT. There's called Meisner technique. One of the things is repetitions. You know, one of the things is just get on stage and do nothing.
Having a lot of like actor friends in LA has shown me how much overlap there is between like a lot of these techniques and acting.
Well, I mean, I honestly do think sometimes acting things come up because you're just like, the whole point of acting is like making your reality malleable. It's like convincing yourself other things are true.
So there's a lot of overlap. I mean, the other one, which is like more cognitive, and people like roll their eyes at this a lot, and I did too the first time I heard it, but it's just when you're like having an intense experience, just literally saying the sentence, I am feeling, and then the emotion word, angry. I am feeling anxious. I am feeling sad right now. Or I am having the experience of sadness right now. I'm having the experience of anger or frustration. And it almost sounds like silly when you say it, but that's the idea. Now you've introduced space between you and your experience for another experience, which is like, this is silly, or like, I feel like this is dumb or whatever. There's now space in between that intense anxiety, sadness, anger, frustration, whatever, and this other experience. And you've just introduced that with language, right? Which is like the thinking part of that cognitive triangle. Mm-hmm. So, And if you kind of default to that, you just retrain your brain to, because all of our thinking is conditioned by language, right? And there are many like philosophers who've talked about this, like Chomsky talks about this all the time, that your reality is actually conditioned by your language. And so you really can't experience reality once you become verbal in a way that's like separate from language. And so if you change your language, you do change the way you understand and structure your reality. And so by saying, I am in this moment experiencing this emotion, you're teaching yourself a different way of cognition. Essentially, you're teaching yourself that there's me there's this time, and there's this experience, and all those three parts are happening, rather than I'm so angry, which is like just this one thing, this intense emotion. Right?
Wow. That's yes, that's great. That's so helpful, because I don't think I've never heard anybody like break down in a granular way how to do that work of separating your, I don't know, egoic sort of truth from an experience that your body is having, like what are the, or how it works, the mechanic of it like that.
And this is what I love so much about it. And really this stuff, I mean, like this really is just lifted directly from Buddhism, or like been, you know, it's been like, it gets to this like positivist kind of scientific orientation, whereas like, is truth constructed or is it discovered? And like this shit, fuck, I mean, yeah, cognitive therapists like talk about this stuff, but Buddhists were writing about it, you know, 5,000 BC. So it's also more accurate. It's not just like better for you. It's more accurate.
Right.
It's closer to the kind of behind the veil, you know, it's closer to the actual reality. There's you, which is another kind of construct compiled by things, but just, you know, because it's easy, we'll call it you. There's you, there's now, and there's this experience that's arising in your perception. I mean, that's all happening. You know, that's more real. It's a more real observation than just like, oh, I'm angry.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So you're talking about it like that, but what is it really? Well, it's this collection of temporal factors, external causing conditions, you, the perceiving architecture, and then you, the kind of material giving rise to the experience, like all of that's happening. And when you look at it that way, you just will feel less intense about it. Now, does that mean you don't have to pay your fucking bills? No, you got to pay them. And like, that's stressful for real. But that's why in Buddhism, there's a middle road, right? There's this intermediate reality. There's the kind of unreality of all these disparate things colluding to produce an experience. But then there's like the immediate consequences that do need to be handled, right? I mean, that's the kind of balance.
Yeah. No, that's very helpful, though. I do think it's helpful also to point out that it is, especially, I don't know, I think a lot of people who are very like rational minded, who already have an instinctive rejection of sort of manifestation theology, you know, or any sort of that toxic positivity stuff, it is who might have more difficulty doing this, because they think, you know, they think it is actually, I think, really important to point out that it is a more accurate description of what's happening. Is like the identity that you have crafted over many years of as a biological organism, but also your conception of who you are as a person and how you respond to events that happen. That's something that you're experiencing right now.
Totally.
Not that it's real. Not that this is like, you know, of course it is, but it's not. That it's a more accurate way to describe what you're observing.
Yeah. I mean, I often, so like I have off, like my brain just makes these funny, like to me funny, like cartoons of these toxic positivity things, like someone screaming at a pile of laundry, like be clean, you know, or things like that, where, yeah, great. Thank you all for this, you know, for this be positive exhortation, but how do you do the things, you know? And so another thing I think about is like these two, if you ever watch like these, when I had my dog, I would like watch, consume a lot of dog training material. So there's like this Caesar Milan dude, but then there was also this British show called It's Me or the Dog. And like Caesar Milan's vibe is like, you know, show is like, change your energy, like change your energy. Like that's what he would do. And then the It's Me or the Dog woman would be like, okay, here are the repetitive tasks you need to perform with your dog. And here's how you treat them with the clicker in order to reinforce the behavior.
Right.
You know, and obviously I fall on that side of things,
yeah.
But this is all to say that it's fine to be, it's great to be positive, but what's missing is the mechanism of action. What is the mechanism of action? Yeah. Positive state of mind typically is going to help you perform actions more effectively, but it's not enough. It's just the ground that then you need to perform the action on. So what is the action that needs to be performed, and how can you best perform that action? That's what I think is, you know, missing.
Yes. Building those habits is like challenging. I guess, well, so that's, I don't know, one simple one that's like you described though a few minutes back that is just seems helpful is that one of trying to get in a mode of just self-narrating what's going on. It's funny. I had a friend, I think I mentioned on here before, but a friend of a friend, and it's become sort of a little internal joke. I think it started as a joke with them and now it's spread where it's, you know, he had a therapy thing that said like, his therapist was like, when you are having a good time, if you realize you're having, because he was feeling so bad so much that you realize, oh, you're hanging out with friends or something, you're laughing, things that you stop and you go, oh, I'm having a good time right now. I am enjoying myself. And yeah. So it's turned into this very funny, thing where we sometimes do this bit with each other, like our friends, where things are going good, and we go like, I am feeling good right now. This is fun. And
yeah.
I'm enjoying myself. But it actually is really nice.
You should do that.
Yeah. But just that ability to, I don't know, putting that trigger into reflexively self-narrate seems, is there like a good trick to doing something like that? So if you are used to getting carried away with your feelings, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, in the beginning, like pegging it to a particular time. So maybe when you, if there's like kind of a time that you are a little more reflective in every day, like maybe right now, maybe it's like at breakfast, you know, usually I'm like rushing out the fucking door, but right now, like my breakfasts are chill. So at breakfast, maybe might be one to like put an alarm in your, like the alarm in your phone, like therapists love the alarm in your phone, put an alarm in your phone at a certain time and put in the line of the alarm, narrate your experience, you know, do that at noon every day, do that at whatever, 4 PM every day, just to start practicing. And then you'll find yourself doing it more frequently, but yeah, you need to do it, because basically the idea is not that you are just being your natural self and you're not doing that. You're not, you're just practicing another behavior that you practice for a long time, which is not doing that, you know?
Yeah.
It's not as if that's somehow more authentic or real. That's just the one you've been practicing longer. So,
yeah,
you know, when you're not doing that, you're practicing the alternative, which is fusion to your emotional experience. So might as well practice the one that's like healthier for you, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it can really get away from you. Like those sort of, it's funny. This is, this is a really funny thing that made me think of, but I know you'll appreciate it. I took a defensive handgun course one time a while ago, and the first day of the class is just talking about legality of self-defense, basically, you know, it's just like,
and never pointing at anything you're not willing to destroy.
Well, that for sure. But like literally getting into like, when are you allowed to shoot someone, basically, you know? And it's actually very profound, I thought. And I was like, this is probably very good for a lot of the people coming to this class, because the big message they're trying to get across to people is, like in the stupidest terms, is basically like, you can't shoot someone because you're mad or because you're scared. That like understanding, obviously anger is obvious, like just because somebody's made you mad, you can't act in a certain way towards them. But to make you understand also just because you're afraid is not a good reason. That's not an okay reason to harm somebody else. And that like getting into the granular aspects of like, if you are objectively in danger of grievous bodily harm or death, that's when you're allowed, basically. And that even becomes obviously subjective to like, what's a jury going to say after. So that's like, you know, whatever. But there was this one glib little thing they said that like, if you act in self-defense, they said, if you have hot ears, it's murder. And if you have cold hands, it's self-defense. That like, when you're really angry, like that this body response to anger is to like get flushed and feel heat in your head and this kind of tunnel vision. And that the body response to true self-defense fear is like blood rushes away from your extremities and you get like numb fingers and toes, which I've experienced even just in jiu-jitsu. But this idea of being able to, even in extremely heightened situations, try to connect with like, what is going on with me right now, despite whatever alarm bells are blaring and telling me to behave in a certain way.
Right. I mean, this, yeah, exactly. And God, it is fucking scary. I'm trying to think, I'm just remembering back to people in my CCW class. Like, what if somebody's running through my yard out my window? I'm like, good Christ, you know, but,
yeah,
but just get the fuck out. I mean, again, this is why we should not rely on temporally bound, transient, intense experiences to make like values decisions. You know, it's data, like it's information. It's important information. Like our emotions are important information, but they probably shouldn't be the sole source of information for making important decisions, you know?
Yeah.
you know, patterns of emotion over time, like, okay, that starts to like put together, you know, like more reliable data.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a longitudinal, you know, pattern of data. So that's like more informative. But like momentary, transient, really intense emotional experiences, like that just shouldn't be your deciding factor, unless it's doing what it's designed to do, like in a kind of fight, flight, or freeze scenario, which is like save your life, you know.
Right.
Then,
I was gonna, yeah. And again, I'm just gonna put one more call out. If anybody has a question or something they want to ask, I think, you know, today I was just so dumb about, I was so like doing other things all week. I didn't put out our pod till yesterday, but so if anybody has a topic that they could bring up, please ask it, because we'll probably wind down here pretty soon, because there's already a lot of good stuff. But I was going to ask you, this is totally like just silly and off topic, and I just was thinking about this, and I was just like, in our dystopian fantasizing, right? If like we're in Mad Max, right? Like if we turned into Mad Max, do you think like, what does a therapist do in Mad Max? Like, do you think you would still figure out a way to like try to help people through their, you know what I mean? Would you become like, what do you do with the instinct to help people if things get like, you know, like less civilized? I'm not talking about like I think what I'm trying to ask is like, without the standard structures of our things, because they're just in a very slight way breaking down, how do you continue like living your values and try to like your purpose? You know what I mean? Whatever your function is.
I mean, so yeah, that's something I think about. I do think, and I believe this is supported by the evidence, one large piece of evidence being the fact that we're all still around. I think that we are just social creatures, and I think we do have a bias towards helping each other, because it's necessary for our survival, you know? So I think that human beings as social creatures and primates just do have a bias towards helping each other. It doesn't mean we can't be little awful, vindictive, violent, horrible pieces of shit. We certainly can be. And we all have that, you know, innate capability, I think, or at least most of us do. But I also think we have a really strong bias towards helping each other. So there's a YouTube channel, and this guy's getting a lot of attention now, as you might imagine. He's called The Sensible Prepper. I'm sure you've heard of him. But The Sensible Prepper, you know, in one of his recent videos, he was saying, you know, a lot of people who do like prepping stuff have this kind of like lone wolf mentality. Like, I'm going to stack my hoard of supplies and I'm going to like shoot people who try to take them. He's like, but really the people who survive in disasters, and we can see, you know, the people who have survived across disasters are the ones who get a good group of people around them and cooperate well. That's who's going to do well, you know?
Right.
So, you know, this instinct to help and cooperate, like, yeah, I think, and if you, you know, you look at, some, like my field of social work, this is like kind of a trait amongst social workers. Like my colleagues and friends are doing amazing stuff, man. They're like organizing, they're disseminating supplies, they're doing a ton of like helpful, good, effective stuff. And I think that that's, you know, what I would hope to try to continue to do, in some capacity, regardless of the intensity and severity of what's going on. I mean, I think, you know, baseline default, I would like want my family to be safe, and that's what I'm trying to take care of, you know, but from a position of relative safety, yeah, like that's what, you know, that's my work. That's like, it's the only work I want to do.
Yeah.
And I would try to find a way to keep doing that. Yeah. I hope. You know, I hope that's
so. I feel like that's a movie. That's a post-apocalypse story I haven't seen that I'd really like to. Like the one practicing therapist who's still, you know what I mean, in like Bullet Town or whatever. Like, you know, he's got an office set up, and like these raiders, like Mohawks and football pads, come in, and they're just like, I don't know, they're just experiencing a lot of anxiety.
Dude, it's something I fantasize about a lot. Like, you know, UFCs here in Nevada. Like, I wish I could find out a way to like go do some work with those folks.
With like MMA fighters and stuff.
I think they could use it. It's so stressful. It's so intense. I mean, they have to be good under pressure. They don't get to that level without like being pretty good under pressure anyway.
Have you watched Fighting in the Age of Loneliness?
No, what is that?
Oh my God, you will love it. So everybody out there, it's especially if you're a fan of MMA, but these, I forget the name. It's a big sports, SB Nation maybe or something like that. They did this like 6-part YouTube series about kind of like the history of MMA, from like the late 80s, early 90s, but even further back, like where did jiu-jitsu come from? Brazilian jiu-jitsu and, you know, and all this stuff. And, it's called Fighting in the Age of Loneliness. And it is so good. It's so beautiful. It's made by some of my, one of my favorite, like, writers who like, you know, writes a lot of articles on the internet and stuff. But anyway, I'll send you the link and anybody else, just check it out. Fighting in the Age of Loneliness. You'll consume it. It's like 6 parts of like 10 or 15 minutes each, but you'll just like blaze through. It's really well done. It's so interesting. And when they talk about these fighters and like the kind of people who get in, who got into this sport when it was starting, basically like these weirdos, like that it's all these like outcasts and that you're looking for this like connection kind of that, like, it's really beautiful. But I think you'll really like it. On that note, we can just segue into like don't kill yourself list stuff. If you have anything, I would say that it's actually very good. And then also, stupid, but potatoes, man, I'm like rediscovering potatoes in, in my nightly dinners or whatever. And, wow, there's like nothing better than potatoes. I made these one the other night. I made these smashed potatoes. I don't even worry about like a smooth, like mash. I don't care about it. I want to just like, I leave the skins on, you boil them with like a little goat yogurt and some a little goat kefir, and then I ground up some goat gouda, and it was like this goat potato. Oh my god, delicious.
Well, okay, my two things is that we finally like got the fuck out of the house and went for a nice drive in the desert mountains yesterday, which was great. Actually, a lot of people out, so we didn't exit the vehicle, but it was still just really nice to get the fuck out of the house. And I also made some canna oil. I made some canna coconut oil.
You just decarb it in coconut oil?
Yeah. Yeah. And I did a shitty job. I like did it in like 45 minutes. And then I accidentally threw out most of the oil thinking it was water, but yeah, like an idiot. But proof of concept, it was effective. I can't like inhale smoke right now. I feel like I'm having like a little bit of an asthma thing, which I have. But that works great. It helps me like sleep well. So
I've made that once too. With my brother, it's good to do with like a shake or like just leftover seeds and stems. And if you have like a bunch of that stuff, and we had collected a ton of like just random old, you know, stuff from a friend who gave us some old stuff. And it's great to just throw that in a pot with, you know, we're talking about cannabis, but I don't know if anybody, and, because you can still get stuff out of it. You gotta be careful not to burn it, I think is the thing. But we ended up with like a bunch of jars of this coconut oil that was like crazy. It was like green oil, and it was like, someone took a spoon of it and like conked out. I mean, I don't know how it was just crazy strong. We got one question. I just want to like, as long as we got somebody, I just thought I'd, they said, what do you suggest for someone with depression who's almost too good at this quarantine? In other words, do you suggest creating a schedule or routines to retain motivation? And, I feel like that's pretty related to a lot of the stuff we were talking about today, but, I'd love to get just granular on that answer because somebody asked.
Yeah. Well, what I would say first is, instead of thinking about retaining motivation, which I think you should give yourself permission to, you know, disentangle yourself from. If motivation shows up, awesome, use it. If it doesn't, it's not a reason to not do things. So what I would do is, figure out which are the tasks that are important to you. And if you're really feeling depressed, I would break it into two categories. One is things that give you a little bit of pleasure. And you may be thinking, well, nothing gives me pleasure. Things that used to give you pleasure or give you like a little blip on mood. And if you don't get any blip on mood, like you're just down and you feel no blip on mood from any activity, things that used to make you feel good. Okay. A couple of things like that. And a couple of things that are like mastery behaviors. And these are things, mastery behaviors are things that they may not make you feel good at all. Like it might be like making your bed, you know, or like vacuuming. I don't enjoy vacuuming, but after I finish vacuuming, which Gina makes me do, I'm like, I'm glad I did that. It's better that I did that. Right. I don't enjoy it. I don't like it. But afterwards I'm like, all right, that's pretty good. You know, the vacuum is fucking done, or like loading the dishwasher. I don't enjoy it at all.
Yeah.
It's a pain in my dick. But afterwards I'm like, all right, it's done. That's good. You know, or I brush my teeth, things like that. So if you're feeling really depressed, give yourself like 3 or 4 things that either do or used to give you pleasure. And 3 or 4 things that give you a little bit of mastery. And none of those things can be like higher than 5 out of 10 difficulty when you're just starting. Okay. And just schedule in one or two of those things a day and detether that from motivation. You don't need to be motivated to do those things. Just do them and see how you feel afterwards. And that's how I could, would, you know, and then you could scaffold them up and, you know, there's more complexity to it. But in the beginning, just a couple of things to give you pleasure, a couple of things to give you mastery, schedule those in and just try to make yourself, if you're not doing any, try to make yourself do one this week. And if that becomes easy, add in another one this week.
Cool.
And then you keep on adding.
Wait, is mastery would be like, is what you're saying, like chores and things like that? Something that's like...
It's going to be, yeah, more or less. It can be different for everybody, but things that give you a sense of accomplishment.
A sense
is what
of
I mean.
Accomplishment. Okay, that's a good definition.
And don't shit on yourself if you haven't brushed your teeth at all this week and you're like, you brush your teeth today. Don't allow the shitty part of your mind who's trying to fuck you over to be like, well, you should have done that anyway. Fuck that part of your mind. It's not helping you at all. So just tell it to shut up and put it back in the corner. And good for you. If you haven't done that at all and it gives you a little bit of a sense of accomplishment, that's awesome. That's good. Yeah. You did your job then.
Yeah, that's – actually, Anthony, okay, so somebody asked this. I will answer you in just a question. Well, let's stay on this point for a second. Yes, this that's actually so helpful. It's so helpful to categorize them as mastery and pleasure, and also just to be able to objectively make yourself a list of things. Excuse me. I'm fine. It was just something in my throat. I'm fine. I was going to say one quote. I mean, I love stupid, like glib, badass quotes. They just help me. You know, I love like,
yeah,
it's, we need it. One of them though, is that, inspirations for amateurs, which is, not something that I necessarily, you know, adhere to all the time. Although I will say I've been making myself do it because, well, two things. One, I've made myself accountable to other people. I got to go live at noon and do the workout. So that helps me create body doubling accountability. But this idea that of like discipline of just like, you just got to do it. And part of it, I think I realized the other day, like we were doing also is doing some like cleaning of the kitchen. And for whatever reason, I just will never get out my childish response to washing dishes or something where I'm just like, I'm grumpy. I don't like to, even though I know the kitchen's clean, I feel way better. I feel so good. So part of it, I was even doing like kind of the thing with Allie where I know I was kind of getting like grumpy and like internal where I have to be like, no, I'm actually not upset. I love that we're doing this. Like I have to say out loud, it's like, I just react this way because of this, but I'm glad we're doing it. It's something I like to do. I prefer it to be clean, even though I'm acting pissed.
Yeah. You don't have to enjoy it in the process. You can just feel good when it's done, which is the mastery. Here's what I would say though, about like inspiration and motivation, to use a video game metaphor. That's a power up, man. You know, like I'm playing Doom right now. And if I get the like fucking, you know, brutality overdrive power up, awesome. That helps me, you know, clear out the room.
Yeah.
But I cannot rely on that. It's a power up. Right. So if you get the power up or you find one, dope, man, that's great. But most of the games can be played without the power up, you know?
Yeah. I think that's really important because I know I had some good days like last week, which just felt amazing. I was like, have I ever been depressed? It's so gone from, this is amazing. I'm cured. And it's like, if I get too carried away with that kind of stuff sometimes, when it goes away, and even in the moment, I was like, I'm really hoping this isn't like, I'm just in a manic phase in a couple of weeks. I don't know if, you know, but I really hope this isn't what's going on. But just because like, I do feel like if I get too attached to those sorts of feelings, then I'll do that like two steps forward, one step back thing that just fucks with me. That just makes me. And then I'm like, oh God, I'm still a piece of shit. Oh, I thought I was cured. I'm back to the same. You know what I mean? If I get too attached to like, I've got this thing. No, I'm cured. And then you slide back or something like that.
Yeah. Right. I think it's really about making it a longitudinal study versus a single time point study.
Yeah.
It's great if you can start to alter little by little the causes and conditions in your life, the parameters of your life, so that you're trending towards more positive mood for longer, more of the time. You know, that would be like a good trend line to think about. But again, all emotions are transient and momentary. They arise and they fall away. It's just about over this kind of eagle's eye view, what is the trend line looking at and how can we like nudge the trend line? That's kind of how we want to be thinking about it. You know?
Someone goes, and they responded, "Thank you for explaining that. I like that idea of maybe not enjoying things, but doing them anyway for the good feeling afterwards." I'll try not to be so hard.
Also, do some things you enjoy, though.
Say that again.
But also do some things you enjoy. But you want to do both of those things.
Yes. I think that's also just, it's a nice exercise that if you can write down, because that's another thing that is, it's hard to do that. But if you can sit there and go like, do you remember, or do you, even if you can't remember it, do you know objectively there were things that brought you pleasure at one point in your life? What were those things? You know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then, okay. So we got this comment. I found a pack of 50 medical grade masks, droplet specific, in my cleaning stuff. I've had them for a while. I work in medical. What should I do with them? I'm going to see if I get this right. I believe, we sent some masks out that we found from a table that we worked on. I had some, N95 masks just we found in the garage. We sent them out. If you go to maskmatch.com, it's mask-match. I'll just put it in the chat here. We sent, we only had like 4 masks, but there was some hospital in Michigan or something like that that could use them. So we sent it there. But I think Allie did that one, and she usually finds good sources and stuff through Ologies and everything like that. So that one, maskmatch.com, I believe, is one good option for finding places to send extra stuff that you got that you're not using. Okay, that's it. Guys, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for, you know, I've been really enjoying this, obviously. We'll keep doing it. I think we're going to do that on YouTube next week. I'll put the new links to all that, and we'll try it out. And otherwise, thank you. If you support us on Patreon, it's www.patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. That rocks. That's so helpful. I'm gonna put these up as pods sooner than a day before this week. Also, if you like this shirt or other things, you can go to mygoodbadbrain.com. I made this little dopamine character, a little dopey on sweatshirts and things like that, and that helps support this thing too. And I don't know, that's it. Thank you for listening. Do you have anything, Dr. Nick? You want anybody to find you anywhere or anything like that?
No, I mean, again, the Twitter is the best way to get a hold of me, I think. Yeah, that's probably the best way.
Are you
way.
Dr. Nicholas Barr 1?
Yes, on Twitter.
Killer. All right, guys, thanks so much. We'll see you guys. I'm going to play this theme song like I do at the end, and then after I rewind it to the beginning, because I still haven't figured out all of these tools, because I keep getting caught up in other things until it's suddenly Sunday morning. Woo! All right. Thanks, Dr. Nick. You're the best. You guys are the best. See you next week. Okay.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person